Do you like vampires? Then please check out Colleen of Lotta Tale of the Damned, a brand new Kickstarter coming August 15th with art by Tim Vigil, Matt Slay, and variant covers by Chandra Akerblom, Heather Rose, and many more. You can find a link over on the Vlada of Dracula Tale page or one of the variant cover artists. Please consider following the Kickstarter today, which is a sequel to Vlada of Dracula Tale. If you missed Vlada of Dracula Tale, books from Vlada can be picked up on the Kickstarter to help the campaign reach its goal. Again, the Kickstarter launches August 15th. It can be found on Kickstarter at Colleen the Vampire or on the Vlada of Dracula Tale page social media, on Twitter, Facebook, or the Radio Horror page or Instagram. Again, please consider helping us get to our goal of $7,000. Thank you.
Nighttime is no place for the living.
Hominis nocturni?
Vampires. This is Vampire Ash.
Blades back.
I didn't hear
you. Welcome back to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to any and all canceled TV shows in the sci-fi, fantasy, and vampire Marvel Universe genre. And we were just in the DC Universe. Now we're entering the Marvel Universe, which I don't think we've done a Marvel show. We've done Swamp Thing the series, Constantine, recently did the Powerless show, Spawn, Witchblade, but we've not done the Marvel Universe yet, and this is our first entry into the Marvel Universe, Mr. Zeneca.
Interesting. Okay, well, I guess we gotta get there sometime.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we're gonna ever cover, like, Nightman, which was 2 seasons, 54 episodes, and only the first season is great. The second season isn't so great. And we're not going to cover the Incredible Hulk. We're not going to cover Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we're definitely not going to cover, like, Inhumans, which got one season. Because I will not try and revisit Inhumans.
We did, however, review the Doctor Strange TV pilot that never took off.
That's right. We did. You did. Okay, so we did enter the Marvel Universe and in the Supernatural, too. And while you were on hiatus, I covered the Generation X pilot movie.
Okay.
Yeah, so. Which we actually had the actor who played Banshee from that movie on the show.
Excellent.
Yeah. He was the he was also a cowboy vampire on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And he sent me three photos, two of him as the vampire cowboy and one of him as with the cast ensemble from Generation X as Sean Cassidy, aka the Banshee.
Wow. Amazing. Cool.
Yeah, and Generation X was the very first X-Men movie ever made. Not the first Marvel movie ever made. That was, if you count the serials, if you count Captain America Death Too Soon, Captain America, Howard the Duck, that stuff came out. And of course, Incredible Hulk had made-for-TV movies as well. But this is the Blade TV series that was on the Spike Network. Spike Network had just launched. It was in the summer of 2006. I know I was preparing for, I just got married, and I was preparing for the birth of my son, who, by the way, just graduated from high school Friday.
Congratulations.
So it's funny that I'm doing this show at a time when he was incubating in the womb and now he's just graduated from high school.
My, how time flies.
Isn't that funny? So it's coming back around. It just hit me realizing that I looked at the time date of the episode airing and I'm like, oh my God, my son was, I just got married a month prior to this show debuting and my son was growing inside my ex-wife. And then he's born in November 2006, and he graduated from high school June of 2025.
Aw.
So.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
I think about this time I was going to the last of my raves because we were preparing to get pregnant with my son. So we wanted to get all the fun out of the way And then my son was born in late 2007. So.
So you had seen all three of the movies prior to this, right?
Yes.
Okay. What did you think of the films before we get to our pilot, and what did you think of the character Blade? Did you even know who the character Blade was?
I did not know the character Blade when I first saw the movie when its original release date. So when the Blade movie came out, I had no knowledge of the character, but I did love the character. The only problem with the character is that you cannot cosplay it unless you have the racial profile for it.
Now, hold on a second. So, not to correct you, but do you know who Dwayne McDuffie is or was?
No.
Okay, Dwayne McDuffie was a prolific comic book writer, African-American, and the creator of the Milestone... Milestone comic books, where Static Shock comes from. You might know Static Shock?
Yes.
Okay, so he created that character. And one time he saw a kid walk by wearing a Static costume. You know, at the time when cosplay was not as massive as it was. And he's like, that's incredible. I love that. You know what I'd love to see also one day? It would be really cool if, like, a white kid was cosplayed as Static. And come back around to 2025, as of, like, the week that we're recording this, Christopher Priest, a well-known prolific black writer in comic books who's written Black Panther, Spider-Man vs. Wolverine number one, which was a one-shot, and a bunch of other books, just started a miniseries about Wakanda, and the reveal at the end of the first issue is that T'Challa's son is white.
Nice.
Yes, but can you imagine how the internet reacted to that?
Well, I must clarify my stance here, because it's not that I believe that, you know, you cannot be that character. The problem is that Blade's costume is so generic-ish that it can be mistaken for any number of goth type of characters. So unless you have, like, the vampire fangs and they're very prominent, and you've got a curved blade and it's very prominent, it's very difficult, because the Blade costume isn't so unique. And I wish that it was, because Blade as a character is a unique character. He's a unique vampire. He's the one that can actually be in the daylight. He was turned at birth, basically. Mm-hmm. The mother had to have cesarean to get him out immediately upon her, you know, transfer of death. And it was, so he is a unique character, but his costume is not. And that is what I, as a lover of costume and cosplay, I wish his costume were more unique, so that you could identify, oh, that's Blade, instead of, oh, that's Neo? Is that a goth kid? Is that
is that goth kid? I love that.
Is that an anime character? You don't know. And so I hope that if Blade comes back into some sort of, you know, figure, they actually do give him a more unique costume. You know, I think he really needs that.
I think it's going to have to look like the way we know Blade to look, because if you ever saw him in the 70s, he had big afro puff hair, a green jacket on, and a row of wooden stakes across his chest, kind of like how you would store your armor around your shoulder, kind of like what Chewbacca wears in Star Wars, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, the bandolier.
Yeah. So everyone always wonders, what is Chewbacca wearing? Well, his bowcaster shoots out lasers, but they're charge kits.
Yeah,
he takes the charge. Now, you never see it happen, which has always been a shame. You never see him use those, but I digress. That's what it's for. That's what's been known to be if you get the character guide.
The costumes in the 70s were all a little bit unhinged, you know, but...
Correct. Now, Blade had the stakes for a long time, until the 90s, before the movie came out, he got the sword. It wasn't until the 90s, because he was created in the 70s, and he kind of took a hiatus through the 80s, because most vampires kind of went away. Marvel didn't want to do vampires, so they killed them all off, except for Blade. Every vampire in the Marvel Universe was wiped out. And Doctor Strange had to read something called the Montessa Reverse Formula, which would save his brother's life, who is a vampire, but had to bring back every other vampire who had ever been killed, including Dracula. So Blade came back in the Rise of the Midnight Suns miniseries, which was like giving Ghost Rider an expanded universe of titles to tie into him, you know, because that was a big thing. And then Blade shows up on the Spider-Man animated series. For the first time ever, animated Blade, where we meet Whistler, we meet Deacon Frost, we get the origin story of his origin, and we meet his mother a few like a couple seasons later as well. Because Blade finds out his mother's still alive and a vampire, and she's the queen of the vampires now.
Mm-hmm.
Blade's big thing is that he's hunting down Morbius. Remember Morbius just got a movie played by Jared Leto?
Yeah, we don't talk about that one.
Right, but Morbius showed up on the Spider-Man animated series, and they weren't allowed to have Blade or Morbius drink blood. It was called plasma. Because they couldn't have some guy necking it out with some girl on a children's cartoon for Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, prior to Blade showing up on Spider-Man, Dracula was supposed to show up on the X-Men animated series, but also the same problem. Because there's a very prolific story involving Storm being bitten by Dracula and almost being turned into his bride.
Mm-hmm.
And in another universe, that did happen. Storm became Bloodstorm, and is a prominent, pretty prolific version of Storm. I think you can also play her on Marvel Rivals, for anyone playing that game. It's a skin you can have. And she's wearing basically like black leather pants, a corset, and a black leather jacket. And she's got like her white mohawk hair and vampire fangs.
Yeah, I've seen that skin. It is quite tasty.
Yes, it is awesome. And I have, by the way, I have both Bloodstorm action figures.
Ooh.
So I have two Blade action figures. I have his Marvel Comics action figure, and I have his movie action figure. And I have two versions of Dracula. I have the original version of Dracula, more done up like the Christopher Lee version, which is what they modeled off of. But over time, Marvel has switched over to more of an armor-clad Dracula with long white hair. I'm not exactly sure why, but it might have to do with copyright reasons. Maybe they made their Dracula too much like Christopher Lee, and they have to distance themselves from it. I don't know. I've never had anyone be able to speak upon it. And in the last movie, Dracula was in the film, played by Dominic Purcell, who you know might know from Prison Break, but Hannah Montana knows as her stepfather. Because he was dating Hannah Montana's mom and is now married to Hannah Montana's sister. Yikes.
All right.
Yes. Anyway, so this TV series does continue from the movies because it is mentioned that Shadow was developing a huffing, puffing little thing that Blade could huff on to help his addiction. And Shadow was played by Natasha Lyonne, who's on a Netflix show called Russian Dolls, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she was this blind woman who created serums, had a kid. And Blade had to force Jessica Biel to stab her in the chest because she got bitten.
Okay.
So that is the connection to the movie. In the commentary, they talk about like, okay, so that right there, that what they're talking about, that was from Blade Trinity, and that is the connection. As well as earlier on, them mentioning like most of the vampires got wiped out. So the ones that survived happened to be in the continent of the United States at the time, because it was like a virus that went out that Blade stabbed himself with. That killed Dracula and a bunch of other vampires. But if you weren't in the continent at the time, I guess you escaped. Hence why our villain, Van Scriver, is in the show. And he's the baddie of most of the show, played by Neil Jackson. And I don't know. I think he could take Deacon Frost for his run for his money as a cool, swabby vampire guy.
I'd agree. Marcus Van Scriver is actually a pretty interesting character.
Correct. And his second in command is a woman named Chase, played by Jessica Gower, who's got a very antagonistic relationship with Jill Wagner, who's probably the biggest star to come out of the show, by the way, who plays Krista Starr. We also get Nelson Lee as Shen, who I found out we would have gotten his entire backstory and learned he has a sister in the second season if there had been one.
I really like Shen as a character, too.
Yeah, and he did live to the end of the show. You know, he does a big torture episode, but I digress. We'll go over more of these cast members and these characters as we go on. Mr. Zeneca, why don't you give the plot synopsis and the air date for the pilot, House of C'thon, and we'll talk about what that means as well if you've seen the Doctor Strange movie.
Blade, the series. Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. Originally aired Wednesday, June 28th. 2006. Blade joins forces with Krista Starr to help her get revenge on an evil empire who killed her fraternal twin brother. That is a very short snippet on IMDb for what is a double-length episode that was chopped into two different parts and aired separately.
Yeah, it definitely had that kind of like mixture of it. Give me one second. There's a concert behind me. I want to make sure the door is closed correctly.
Okay.
And if you bought a DVD of this, this actually came packed with the other three Blade movies, and it's called Blade House of C'thon. And I was working at Blockbuster Video, and people asked me, I didn't know there was a fourth Blade movie. I was like, no, it's the pilot for the TV show. And they're like, well, how do you say the title? I'm like, it's called House of C'thon. And C'thon is the demon in the Marvel Universe who wrote The Darkhold. Have you seen WandaVision or possibly Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness?
I watched WandaVision.
Okay, so you know the Darkhold is the ancient evil book, right?
Yes.
Okay, so in the movie Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which I do recommend watching, it's directed by Sam Raimi. You get a great cameo by Bruce Campbell in it.
It's on my bucket list, but I've got a lot of other things that you've put there, so I have a long list to get through.
Not to overly spoil the film, but the temple of C'thon is in the film. C'thon himself does not show up, but... C'thon is this demonic entity in the Marvel Universe. The Darkhold is that, like, book that seems to be floated around amongst many people in the Marvel Universe. At one time, Carnage had possession of the Darkhold, which is probably the worst person you want in possession of a book of that ultimate evil. Mm-hmm. The first appearance of the Darkhold in comic books was in an issue of Tomb of Dracula, where Blade originates from, but Werewolf by Night. And Werewolf by Night, you know, has a special on Disney Plus. Jack Russell, The Werewolf by Night.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch that?
I watched a little bit of it.
Okay. It's really good. I think it's fantastic. And I wish they had make a sequel to it. And I bring up Jack Russell because Blade does mention Mark Spector briefly in this show later on in another episode. And Mark Spector, of course, is... the Moon Knight, who had his own TV show played by Oscar Isaac.
Yes, that was actually a pretty good show.
And Oscar Isaac is going to be Dr. Victor Frankenstein coming up in Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein for Netflix.
I think he'd do well in that role.
By the way, the Frankenstein monster also exists in the Marvel Universe. Someone else that they could pull into some supernatural stuff.
But if you ever have you ever read... Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, like actually read it?
Yeah, a long time ago.
It is a hell to get through.
I think by today's standards, yes, but I think there's abridged versions out there that are easier to read.
I know, but it's like one page.
There's a book called Illustrations Classics that is definitely written for children, but keeping all of the stuff in the book that's important. So it's not watering it down, but it is definitely rewriting it for a more modern contemporary way. And I've read that as well as the original story.
The original, it's good story. Don't knock the story. I just knock the way it was written because she really loves to use run-on sentences.
Indeed.
Run-on sentences, the length of an entire page being one sentence.
The movie opens up, the pilot opens up in Moscow, which is kind of funny considering that the end of the first Blade movie, he's in Moscow.
Yeah, picks right back up.
Well, the first Blade movie ended with him in Moscow, and the beginning of the second movie began with him in Moscow. The third movie ended with Blade dead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Ryan Reynolds and Jessica Biel's characters. This is the first scripted show by Spike TV, like I said. Unfortunately, it was canceled due to the fact it was very expensive to make. And then you watch this movie, it's all the money is there.
Oh, the choreography in this show is great. The lighting is good. The sets are excellent. Like, you can tell this show had a lot of money poured into it.
And the commentary with the writer, which is, by the way, it's Jeff Johns, who you might know from Justice League fame and writers of several comic books out there, is on there with David Goyer, who is the creator of the Blade movie franchise. And they talk about how, like, the network wanted them to go harder. Like, they presented what they did, and then the network was like, more tits, More action, more blood, more swearing, go harder. We're not your regular cable show. So that's why there's nudity in this, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of blood, too.
I did that because it was air TV.
Yeah. So we get this, the pilot for the show is directed by a guy named Peter, Fallon. I do like the fact that they're given the comic book creators are also given their credits, Marv Wolfman and Gene Cullen, who were the writers and artists of Blade. Gene Cullen is no longer with us, but Marv Wolfman is still with us. He was the writer of The Tomb of Dracula, creator of Blade, and also The Crisis on Infinite Earths and Teen Titans. So he created Beast Boy, Starfire, Cyborg, Raven, those characters you probably know.
Okay, cool. Peter O'Fallon, the director of the first episode here, the pilot, was also known for directing Suicide Kings and a TV series called Legit.
Interesting.
In 2014. Yeah.
Kirk Sticky Finger Jones, they talk about how there was some pushback when he was announced to be Blade, and it was because he wasn't as big as Wesley Snipes, but they thought he did a pretty good job, and after the pilot, I was fine with him playing Blade. I didn't have a big problem with it. He's still working today and doing things. He has his own website, and I have reached out to him to see if he would be interested in coming on the show, so... but he was also in Flight of the Phoenix and Next Friday, things like that. But as Blade, as a stand-in for Wesley Snipes for a TV show, I think he's fine.
I think he did really, really well. You know, other than, let me correct. He did well for the lines that he was given and the plot lines that he was given. So far from what I've seen, the character that they have written so far in this pilot is a little bit more shoot first and ask questions later. And killing off witnesses that he might have used later, you know, with information. So it's a little bit more, you know, I think as Wesley Snipes' Blade character, there's a little bit more restraint into the killing of witnesses. But this Blade kills a lot of people needlessly. But I think that's just script and that's nothing having to do with his acting ability. I think he was acting as the badass that he was written. Not that the character was completely this badass, but yeah, I think he did really well.
Nelson Lee playing Shen is kind of like, do you ever watch the Flash TV show, the recent one?
Yes.
He's like, what's his name, in the chair.
Chair.
Barry's guy in the chair.
I'm drawing a blank.
Vibe? His superhero name was Vibe, but when he wasn't superheroing around, he was Barry's dude in the chair to help him, navigate...
Oh, Vibe, yes! Ah, yes, I remember now.
Yeah, that was, the best part of the Flash show, was that character, that actor, being yes. Barry's, dude, Felicity, or Felicia, whatever her name is on Arrow, was Oliver's, you know, and eventually they fall in love. But he on The Flash reminded me of Shen a lot.
This character, Shen, I love it. You know, he is very technologically savvy. He is calm. He is a perfect match against Blade's very stoic nature.
Right.
And Shen is very kind of a comic relief a little bit, but he knows what he's doing and his technology works, but it might be a little bit glitchy. And that seems to bring a more natural and human element to the character. He's not just a Mr. Fix-It-All and it's perfect. He has flaws.
The guy killed at the beginning is Marcus's friend who feels betrayed by Zach. And Zach is also Krista's brother.
Yeah, he is offed right in the beginning by Marcus through a bullet in the head after thinking that he was going to have his turn to be a vampire.
And I knew right from the beginning, before they get to the final scene in the cemetery where Krista visits her brother's grave, that mm-hmm. Zach was probably working for Blade.
Yeah.
And that's what got him killed. I mean, well, I mean, he didn't. Van Scriver didn't specifically say you're working with the Daywalker, which is the enemy of all vampires. But you know, it was pretty obvious. I felt it feels like a plot line from like the one of the Punisher movies. I believe had this kind of similar plot line. Do you remember that?
I haven't watched them.
You've never seen any of the Punisher films?
No.
Or the TV show?
No.
Oh my God.
No, the character doesn't really appeal to me.
He recently popped up again on the Daredevil Born Again.
Okay.
Blade having cameras in his glasses is very straight out of the comics, I think.
It's cool.
He can read the glyphs and everything. That's cool, yeah. It's a very iron. By the way, this is 2 years before Iron Man.
Yeah, he's got his heat vision on his glasses. He has his two-way communication with Shen. Like, he has some computer interface. It's great.
Yeah, and again, like the technology is straight like what Tony Stark would do.
Absolutely.
Hmm.
So in the beginning, we see this. What is happening behind the scenes? We see this crooked cop take away a prostitute under potential, you know, deal, you know, sexual encounter. And he takes her over to this warehouse, and this warehouse is filled with vampires that are kind of hanging from the ceiling. These vampires are not just regular vampires, they are test subjects for the new garlic vaccine.
Vaccine,
I know.
It's an entire, do you know what this whole scene with this and the humans that are found that way as well, the farm? Have you ever seen the film Daywalkers?
Daywalkers. Sounds familiar.
It's about the world is now entirely been turned into vampires.
Is this another I Am Legend take?
No. Spin? This stars William Dafoe and Ethan Hawke.
Okay.
This is a sci-fi vampire movie. Oh, Sam Neill. Sam Neill plays the leaders of the vampires. And the entire world wakes up at night, you know what I mean? And there's farms of humans. And the posters have the word, the title Daywalkers, and the poster is all the humans hooked up to the machines, you know, in bags. And it's very reminiscent of, you could say, The Matrix as well. Because we're all hooked up into batteries. You know, we are the batteries for the machines.
Mm-hmm.
So this scene reminded me of Daywalkers, which I don't think had come out yet. But I think Daywalkers saw this and then did it themselves. Because I'm almost positive Daywalkers came out in the second decade of the millennial.
So when I first saw their process, like, I was kind of wondering, like, what are you doing with the vampires and hooking them into, like, these bags? Because don't you usually farm human blood, not vampire blood? And aren't you as a vampire stronger and can get out of this plastic bag thing? So I don't exactly know what they're entirely doing. Like, they might be feeding them some sort of like passivization ailment, because these fresh-born vampires cannot fight back enough to get out of these bags, and they're just kind of hooked up with meat hooks and tubes and whatnot, keeping them alive, and they're being drained of blood until it is the point time when they get undone from their bag, injected with the vaccine, and then, oh, it's a failure. Dust off the counter and try it again. Yeah, so there's some other process that we haven't yet seen that is more than just the vaccine trials.
Hmm.
Yeah, because these vampires almost, in one scene towards the end of the second part of the episode, these vampires almost look like they're drained like Capri Suns. You know, some of the vampires up front are kind of mummified in this process with these tubes. So something is happening there. It's not quite clear with the what we've seen going on so far with their blood process.
By the way, did you know that Wesley Snipes broke a record of the longest career playing a character in live action for Marvel for 26 years because he came back in Deadpool and Wolverine?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a record on that.
It was by Hugh Jackman. And okay. Patrick Stewart, who has played Professor Charles Xavier numerous times. And Hugh Jackman obviously came back to play Wolverine one more time. No word yet on any of these people returning to play their characters in the upcoming Avengers movie, but I think because James McAvoy has been cast as Charles Xavier again in the upcoming Avengers Doomsday.
Okay.
Don't have a lot of use for Blade in like a movie like Avengers Doomsday fighting Doctor Doom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Kristen visits her family and comes to Zach's apartment. And did you notice Zach is a comic book collector?
Yes, I did. Nice little Easter eggs there.
Yeah, did you notice what the title of one of those comic books were?
I did, but I did not take a note of it.
Tomb of Dracula.
Yes.
Which is, again, where Blade comes from. He first appeared in Tomb of Dracula number 10. So I thought that was really cool. When she runs after Blade, though, they say in the commentary there was another scene that was cut out that explains the cut on her arm a little better than her cutting her arm on a brick. I brushed up against bricks before. I never cut my arm the way she is bleeding. Yeah. And I always thought that was really strange. All of a sudden, like, I see her, like, scrape her arm. And then when she's out in the street and she's looking around trying to find Blade, her arm is profusely bleeding from the shoulder. I'm like, what is going on? And then I finally listen. I've never heard the commentary for this pilot before. I finally listened to it, and they were like, there's a scene where she was actually supposed to get into a fight, and that's why her arm is cut. Not because she cut it on a brick. But for time, we kept it in there, and it looks like she cut her arm in the brick, but it seems like she's a pretty weak person to just get her arm cut on a brick. You know, like a fight would have made more sense. And then Blade sniffs the blood and he does a snarl. That just looks awful. That whole scene where he's like on the roof, you're like, I can smell the blood. Okay. How many women in the city are possibly having their periods right now?
That's different. That's supposedly dead blood.
But it's almost the same thing. Because vampires have commented on
the vampire canon of Blade is supposed to be dead blood. I remember this was applied in some sort of like nerd battle I was in a long time ago.
Do you remember the movie Pitch Black?
Yes.
Okay, in that movie, that's how Vin Diesel is able to figure out that the young bald child is not a boy because she's having her period.
Mm-hmm. What do you want me to say?
I don't know. I didn't say it was great. I was just saying that if you have heightened senses, you should be able to. I mean, this is like, is it why they say women shouldn't go swimming in the water while they're having their period or hiking in the woods where bears are around?
That is also kind of a misnomer.
Is it? Okay, I didn't know. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Blade gets his new serum. One of the people...
We find out that there is a new drug on the street.
Yes.
And that is vampire ashes.
Yes. Sniffs the ashes of the dead. Didn't some famous rock star do that? Didn't he, like, snort his father's ashes? Wasn't that... Mick Jagger?
No, I don't think it was Mick Jagger. It might have been his bandmate.
Okay. Also, you're into some freaky shit. Are you allowed to, like, snort up the ashes of your dead lover if he died?
You are allowed if they gave you permission to.
Are you allowed?
Am I allowed? Yes, I am allowed.
Okay. Aha! I knew it!
Yes, we have had that conversation. We are allowed to snort each other's ashes after death, but they are not drugs, so why not do anything? And I would prefer to have my ashes compressed and made into diamonds.
One of the name of the character... By the way, was it surprise to you to see Randy Quaid show up in this?
Oh, Randy Quaid is great. He is a how do you call him? He's a scientist, a professor... and a former vampire acolyte, and he has taken so much of the vampire ash as a drug that he has gnawed off two of his fingers.
Ew.
Because it gives you all the vampire elements. You know, he's got the strength, the senses, everything else, but also gives you the thirst, and the thirst cannot be quenched. And so he said most people just gnaw their hands off, and he said, you know, look at me. Yeah.
By the way, do you know who played... so there's a couple flashbacks, too, of the brother and sister as children. Do you know who played young Zach in the flashback?
I don't have it in front of me. Who did?
Quinn Lord. Do you know who that is?
Quinn Lord. Let's see. He was in Once Upon a Time?
He was Sam in Trick or Treat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he is Thomas Smith, the young Nazi son in The Man in the High Castle.
See, I haven't seen Man in the High Castle.
Ah, okay, but you have seen Trick or Treat.
I have seen Trick or Treat, and I do believe he is in Once Upon a Time.
He is for a single episode, but I think most fans know him as the young Nazi boy, but also his debut as an actor is in the burlap sack and long johns as the embodiment of Halloween, Sam, in Trick or Treat.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, he doesn't have any lines in the movie, but he's wearing that costume. You know, it's kind of like Michael Myers in a way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But that's what horror fans mostly know him as. But I was looking just, you know, through the IMDb credits a week ago when I was watching this and just being like, oh, wow, look at that. Randy Quaid, by the way, his name is taken from a staff writer at Wizard Magazine, the Guide to Comics, which was a prolific magazine through the 90s and early 2000s that reported on everything happening in comic books.
Cool.
It is really cool to see Randy Quaid's, like, apartment with all the weird vampire stuff around it.
Oh, yeah, and he says that this little tiny bottle of vampire ash can go for $1,000.
There's a vampire head in a UV-protected fluid behind him. Did you catch that?
Yes.
Yeah. I had to pause it real quick to look around when when David and Jeff Johns are talking about everything that's happening, just to see what they were talking about real quick, because it doesn't linger on anything too long. But he's, by the way, he is uncredited in this, too. There's several people that are uncredited in the show, including... I think another actor that we have may have mentioned before as a spotlight here and there, John Tench. He played a paramedic driver. He's got like a line, and he's been in like a ton of stuff, including shows we have covered previously.
Okay, cool.
Rabie vampires. What did you think of that? Like rabid, crazy vampires.
I would assume that at some point vampires would get super hangry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's humans can get hangry, but I would believe vampires get really hangry. They get hangry and primal and rabid, and I'd love it.
Do you enjoy the transitions that they do from day to night? It's the sped up formula that you saw a lot in the 90s, you know, in the early 2000s, and 2006 is still the early 2000s.
It's stylistic, you know?
There was, like, when two people are walking down the street, they're walking very slowly, but everything around them is moving super fast.
Sped up, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a style. It was popular at the time, you know.
There's a company that pops up in this when Blade and Kristen finally hook back up, and not in a sexual way, called the American Butcher Company. You can actually find they have a website. They make black Angus cattle from the Midwest, and they have a high stock of pigs as well.
And in this show, a high stock of vampire test subjects.
Indeed. They have a lovely picture of a bunch of cattle in a field, and then they have a lovely picture of people holding what can clearly be cattle meat.
And of course, about this time in the show, we have to go through the entire, like, Blade backstory in case you hadn't caught it.
Yeah.
Exposition. Randy Quaid has to say the exposition, all that.
Mm-hmm.
We have to catch everyone up on who Blade is, what this is about.
Now, here's something that's really funny. I didn't know this. In the Blade films, you know that Blade's mother's name is Vanessa, but his father has never been named.
Yeah, it's kind of a question.
Correct. But we get it now. Robert Brooks and... Richard Roundtree will play Blade's father on this show coming up.
Awesome.
Shaft. For anyone not familiar, we will definitely be playing the Shaft theme song when Richard Roundtree is on the show.
Definitely.
But not our show, because Richard Roundtree, unfortunately, did just pass away.
Oh.
Yeah. And we only... By the way, this clip of Vanessa reaching out on the gurney, that's from the first Blade film.
Yes.
So
I recognize that.
Keeping in continuity with who played Blade's mom. By the way, just because she is in this for a quick, brief moment, I don't know a lot about this actress, but do you know what famous cartoon character she's played recently on Fox over the last several years?
Well, you're talking about the actress Sanaa Lathan?
Yes, she was Cleveland's mother on The Cleveland Show and Family Guy.
Oh, wow. Nice. I did not know that.
I didn't know that either until I was looking her up. Because she posted a clip saying she's missing playing this character. I was like, oh my god, that Blade's mom is Cleveland's wife?
Donna Tubbs.
Yeah. Always drawn with one boob bigger than the other. You know, just the way she's animated.
She's also the voice of Catwoman on Harley Quinn.
Is she? I didn't realize that as well. Yeah. They do make Catwoman on that a little tanner. Like, Lex Luthor has also got a tan to him. You know, like, he's not black, but he's not white either.
Eh. Who cares?
Jill is beautiful at this gala in this white dress. And they make a point saying that Spike asked for the girls to be in dresses with cleavage.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. She would, after this show ends, go on to host kind of like an extreme sports running over balls of water, jumping, you know what I mean, for competition show for like 5 or 6 seasons.
Oh, wow.
So okay. She was always in like a sports bathing suit, you know, kind mm-hmm. of thing. But she is gorgeous on this show. She is absolutely incredibly sexy.
Yeah, and when she turns a vampire, it's also pretty hot as well.
Yeah, the costume she has when she goes to visit Zach at his grave is pretty freaking awesome, let me tell you. I'm all for that costume.
Yeah, so the reason that she's at the gala in the white dress is she's supposed to plant a transponder onto Marcus in order to follow his movements and track where the vampire clan is doing their business, listen in, etc. And because they recognize who she is, that she is Zach's sister, it doesn't fool him for a second, and the whole thing gets kind of blown all to pieces, the plan, and she kind of goes rogue. And it's right before she walks up to Marcus with the transponder in her hand, that's where we cut for part two. And then part two was aired shortly thereafter, so that the pilot was one long episode. But on the version that I saw, it's like the part one, part two. And the version that Dr. Chris has is just one long episode.
Now, it's also funny, into the commentary, when I was talking about how Spike TV wanted this show to get more extreme, they wanted lesbian sexual tension between Kristen and Chase. They wanted him kissing. They wanted him touching. They wanted him in bed with Van Scriber. You know what I mean? Like, they wanted the lesbian sex appeal of this show to be pumped up to 1,000 because Spike TV was the man's network and men want to see women making out and being hot and borderline rated R.
Yeah. Men's network wants women to get together for them instead of getting together for themselves.
Oh, yes. This is not a political LGBT thing. This is strictly for the male gaze thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or the lesbians gaze. Or the lesbian gaze.
No.
Yes.
No,
yes.
No.
Yes.
Lesbian gaze is a slightly different than a male gaze. I can tell you that. I know for certain. Lesbians gaze would not have quite so fake to all of their beauty touches.
Now, why does Van Scriber stab her with the vampire blood instead of biting her and turning her into a vampire? I never got that.
He says that it's unreliable when you're bitten, so that it's a transmitted condition. So, in order to guarantee that there has been transmission, he directly injects his blood into her, whereas a regular bite there might not be as much transmission of the condition through the mouth. So he wanted it to actually be sure to take. And so his transformation of her absolutely takes, and when she has the opportunity to have her first meal, be that, you know, crooked cop that we saw earlier in the episode, she bites him, and there is a chance that he wouldn't have turned. But by the end of the episode, we do get a little tasty nugget of poetic justice when that cop gets turned into a vampire and comes to this realization of that, oh, yes, I've been wanting to be a vampire. I am a vampire. I feel it. And then he has that sad realization that, oh my God, I'm in the body farm. And he has been hooked up with all these tubes, and that's the end of the episode. We get that last little tidbit of poetic justice at the very end. But before that happens,
though, we have Blade fighting everything that happens, and Kristen in her goth-out outfit. The commentary for the directors also point out that the reason why Chase dresses the way she does is because she was turned in the 1930s. And a lot of times, vampires, based on when they're turned, will continue acclimating to that kind of style. That happens in Once Bitten. Do you remember all the vampires sleeping in their coffins based on where their era they're from?
Yeah, yeah. It's actually a pretty common vampire trope. It's like they can't expand themselves past the point that they were turned.
Correct.
Like
What We Do in the Shadows does that to comedic results, with the vampires not understanding what technology really is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And them waving their hands like they're trying to hypnotize somebody at the computer screen, expecting it to do something. Which, FYI, in today, that movie came out in 2014. In 2025, you can wave your hand at computers and they will flip screens left and right. So that's funny to think about, but Iron Man was doing that in 2008. So
one thing you also need to think about is that dead flesh does not transmit electronic signals. So a touch screen might not actually work for a vampire.
Correct. By the way, going back to the what is the male and the female gaze, and this being a Marvel production, July of 2025, next month, Marvel is publishing for the first time in over 30 years the Marvel Swimsuit Special, something they haven't done in a long time. It's just a lot of pinups of their characters in bathing suits. And they'll have multiple covers for this thing. The one in the covers that I've seen so far is by Adam Hughes, a prolific Marvel artist known for drawing very busty women. Has the Avengers at the pool. She-Hulk, Iron Man, Captain America, Black Panther, Scarlet Witch, Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp, the Hawkeye, Captain Marvel, and the Black Widow, all in bikinis, Speedos, or bathing suits. So there's something there for everybody.
So they're putting out a summer issue for your Spank Banks.
Basically, approval. Yeah. I mean, with various artists on it, like Tim Seeley, my buddy on the Goth Girl Horror podcast, Nick Bradshaw, Tony Fleas, and a cast of Marvel artists. I don't know if there's a plot line going to run through this. It's just going to be a lot of pinups of male and female hot Marvel characters, like Black Cat, Mary Jane, you know, White Queen. They have one of the Phoenix lifting Scott. Like, she's like upside down in a bikini. How is she spilling out of it? It's probably her telekinesis keeping her bikini in check. And lifting Scott out of the water, and he's completely bare other than, like, his shorts on. You know what I mean? So they are putting the chisel-looking guys on there with the women in bikinis. So,
yeah, I mean, it's just fat material.
Basically, yeah. I mean, will I buy it? Yeah, why not?
Oh, we all know you'll buy it, Dr. Chris.
Krista waking up in this goth outfit is hilarious. The overtones of the entire thing are hilarious. But when Blade gets to the farm, it's Blade versus the penned up vampires, Blade versus the regular vampires, Blade versus Kristen, Blade versus everybody. It's like the entire budget for the fight choreography happens in this last half hour.
Oh, but it's great fight for choreography.
Yeah.
Money well spent, I have to say.
Yep. Now, Kristen's family thinks she's totally fine, and she can't go back and see him because of what happened to her, by the way. And at the cemetery, after all the fighting is over, and Blade gets some clarity into Kristen's head, as he calls it, with his serum, because he thinks he can, as long as she doesn't feed on human blood, she can be turned back. And the only time she's fed on a human was that cop, right?
So far.
But is that enough to turn her? It's never resolved because, unfortunately, the show is canceled.
I would say it's probably too late. You know, she had her first meal of human blood, and that is usually what does it.
Yeah.
Lock in the disease.
Something like that, indeed. So, that's how it ends, and it ends with your cop, of course, on the gurney as well. So I don't know if we see him again. I think I was told that he shows back up one more time, so
that'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah. So, well, that's all the notes I have here for the pilot for Blade.
Yeah, the only other note that we didn't talk about was that the transition from human into vampire allows you to see ultraviolet light. And so that's why the symbols are drawn in UV paint. So that it was very interesting to see Krista adjusting her eyes so that she could actually see the vampire acolyte symbols and the marks of the each of the vampire houses. That was pretty interesting.
Definitely. Well, Misha Zetica, we're on this for the next several weeks. Where can people find you?
Well, I can be found at elegantlykinky.com or on Instagram, elegantlykinky. I've been doing a lot of parties, and I have a big one coming up in July 31st, August 1st, August 2nd. It's a toga party. 3 days. It's going to be pretty wild.
And you can find me over on the rest of the episodes of the Dead TV podcast or over on the Vampire Movie Minute podcast, where we are covering the Blade film, the first one with Wesley Snipes. We'll take bevy of guest stars, including Little Puck and Brian Hill, who is a writer of the Blade comic book series, who joined me for 2 episodes. Find me on Radio of Horror on Sunday nights. Send us an email, thatradiohorror@gmail.com. Please leave a comment on iTunes or Stitcher or Amazon or wherever you happen to find the Dead TV podcast, please. Thank you very much. Also, pick up my regular ongoing vampire book, Vlada, A Dracula Tale, my own little look into the vampire genre. And thank you, everyone, for joining us for the first episode of Blade here on the Dead TV podcast.
Good night.